Well, good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Court of Appeals for the state of Minnesota. It is Wednesday, February 21st, and we have four cases scheduled for oral argument today. As the marshal noted, I'm Judge Sarah Wheelock. Here with you on the panel are Judge Reyes and Judge Eade, and we are holding these arguments in room 200 of the Minnesota Judicial Center. As you may know, oral arguments are recorded by the court, and the audio recording of these proceedings will be available on the court website within about 24 hours. And with that, I'm going to have the marshal call the first case on the calendar this morning.
The first case this morning is A231382, State of Minnesota by Smart Growth Minneapolis, a Minnesota nonprofit corporation, Audubon Chapter of Minneapolis, Minnesota Citizens for the Protection of Migratory Birds, respondents, versus City of Minneapolis, appellant.
And counsel, as you probably know, you will each have 15 minutes for your primary argument with an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal for appellant. There's a podium at the center with a speaker, and there's a button on the front of that can adjust the height up and down for you, so feel free to move that around. As you introduce yourself today, please identify yourself and identify the name of the client that you represent so that we have that for our recording. And with that, counsel for appellant, feel free to adjust the podium and you may begin when you are ready. One other note, there's a clock right there so you can see how your time is going. And whenever you're ready to begin, the marshal will start the clock.
May it please the court, my name is Kristen Sarf, and along with my colleague Haynes Hansen, I represent the City of Minneapolis. When I was a kid, my school library had choose your own adventure books. You'd read a few pages and then the book would give you an opportunity to choose amongst a series of adventures. Turn to page 10 and you go swim off to Mermaid Lagoon, turn to page 20 and you descend into Shark Alley. And I couldn't help but think about those books as I read Judge Klein's amended injunction order. Because Judge Klein treated this court's order as though it was a child's choose your own adventure book, where he could pick any path and any ending without regard for the consequences and peril that would come along the way. But that fiction cannot withstand this court's specific remand instructions, the text of the mirror relief provisions, or the Minnesota Supreme Court set forth law of the case in this matter. This court should reverse the injunction for a second time because the district court committed legal error and abused its discretion. This story should start and end with the district court's decision, its choice to ignore the remand instructions. The Court of Appeals gave clear and precise remand instructions. Conduct additional proceedings to determine if an immediate and full build-out of the 2030 comprehensive plan would cause fewer environmental effects than the 2040 full build-out of the comprehensive plan. Because absent such a finding, the injunction's order to revert back to the 2030 plan did not remedy the purported environmental effects that could be caused under the 2040 plan. And it cannot serve the interests advanced by MIRA, because reverting to a 2030 comprehensive plan with unknown effects or possibly greater environmental effects cannot protect the environment.
Where do you see in Smart Growth 2 a specific remand instruction to conduct a full build-out analysis of the 2030 plan? I mean, at the outset of the opinion, we wrote, we reverse and remand the order for injunctive relief because the district court did not make adequate findings to enable appellate review. And at the conclusion, we wrote, we reverse the injunctive relief and remand for additional proceedings on respondents' request for injunctive relief. So where is the specificity of that analysis in our remand instructions?
I find it in a different provision in the order, Your Honor, at Addendum 56. That is where the court said, we can conclude that the Supreme Court accepted respondents' legal conclusion that the environmental effects of the 2040 plan must be determined based upon a presumption of a full build-out.
So just to be clear, are you? It sounds like your challenge is more to what it needed to analyze vis-a-vis our opinion, which references the Supreme Court's opinion versus just running afoul of the remand instructions themselves?
It would be both, because the remand instructions exist because the court acknowledged the law of the case set forth by the Minnesota Supreme Court, that you can't remedy environmental harms if you go back to a 2030 plan where you don't know the type and scope of development that would be permitted, and you don't know the environmental effects that would arise from that. And so there's no legal basis to know the environmental effects of the 2030 plan without doing that full build-out analysis.
Right, but that's analysis on the merits versus not necessarily following the remand instructions in terms of like going beyond the scope of the record or having additional hearings that are not were not properly authorized by this court. So it sounds to me what you're arguing is really the legal merits that the district court committed legal error.
I do definitely think the district court committed legal error, but I believe the remand instructions, I believe that the provisions that you read, Judge Ede, identify those specific remand instructions, because the Court of Appeals said it's persuasive that based upon the finding of facts, we don't know what a full build-out of what the 2030 plan would be. And so we don't know what the environmental consequences of the 2030 plan would be. Which means
all we said was that they should, that the district court should conduct additional proceedings. I mean, that as long as the district court did not act inconsistent with those instructions, wasn't it within the district court's discretion whether or not the record ultimately supported the decision the district court made, but wasn't it within the discretion of the district court to leave the record closed and leave the evidence as it existed at the time of summary judgment?
Even if he kept the record closed, the closed record shows, there's a page in the district court's order where for literally an entire page it says, I don't know what happens under the 2030 in terms of water. I don't know what happens with the 2030 in terms of concrete use. I don't know what happens in the 2030 in terms of air pollution. We have reverted to a 2030 plan that you don't know what the environmental consequences are. And So
is your argument on that point, is your argument that the record does not support the findings by the district court because we just don't know what the environment, there's nothing in the record to show what the environmental impact would be from the 2030 build-out, much less from the 2040 build-out, full build-out?
The district court did not make any findings about the type and scope of development under the 2030 plan or its environmental consequences. But I would say that there is a record about the 2040 plan and what, in theory, would be the environmental harm from there. And you've got the Pauley report. And what the Pauley report tells you is that you don't get to environmental harm under the 2040 plan until you hit approximately 150,000 triplex units. It doesn't give you any kind of environmental harm up to and including up to that approximately 150,000 units.
But isn't it just that the Pauley report doesn't say anything about what happens less than 150,000? The presumption is a full build-out, and that's the basis for the harms that Pauley lists in the report.
And that's dispositive, where the plaintiff has a significant burden of proving their entitlement to injunction. They had an opportunity to present new information or rely upon the Pauley report to say that that their expert did a comparison between the 2040 and the 2030 plan. The district court found that the Pauley report didn't do that. Then, in order to be entitled under MIRA to prove that it is necessary and appropriate to take equitable relief, they have to prove that they're stopping the environmental harm. And what the Pauley report does for 40 pages is it talks about development that's allowed underneath the 2040 plan, and then it concludes that if you get to 150,000 units, then there's environmental harm.
So let's say we agree with you that the Pauley report isn't sufficient to meet that necessary or appropriate standard under 116B.07 for relief. In your briefing, in your opening brief, you conclude by asking us to reverse and to essentially order a injunction or conditions that caps residential development at 100,000. What in the record would support that as necessary or appropriate to address the MIRA violation that's already been found at summary judgment and affirmed by us and the Supreme Court has denied review on, what in the record supports 100,000 as the cap?
The Pauley report does. Because the Pauley report blasts past 100,000 units and it doesn't ascribe any environmental harm to it. And the district court order supports that. Because the district court order on the original stay said that there's nothing in the record that the current rate of development underneath the 2040 plan causes any environmental harm. And on the first stay motion, the district court found that on the current rate of development, that there was not irreparable harm, which means that you know that anything that caps development at a rate that the district court found as a matter of fact does not cause environmental harm. And 150,000 units, which the respondents and the district court conceded would take literally, mathematically, thousands of years to achieve, is it necessary and appropriate to stop the real-life level of development in order to stop something thousands of years in the future?
The absence of evidence is not evidence. This is something that you essentially are arguing with regard to the record supporting the injunction, right? That without an analysis of the full build-out under 2030 and that page of there's no evidence about what will happen under 2030 in the district court's order, the district court didn't have grounds to issue an injunction against any implementation of the residential development portions. So what in the record supports 100,000 other than you saying, well, she never addresses what will happen at 100,000. Or is it, because in your reply brief, I notice that you conclude with simply asking us to straight reverse. Which is it that if you could have your disposition from this court that you're really asking us to? Because what are we to hang our hat on that 100,000 is the necessary or appropriate remedy versus there's not sufficient evidence in the record to show a full injunction against any implementation is what is necessary and appropriate under 116B.07.
I consider the Pauley report to be affirmative representations that when Pauley analyzed the 2040 plan and decided when the threshold harm came, she only opined that it happened at 150,000 units. And there's an internal number about a hypothetical Appendix B, which was 48,000 units. She discusses that, does not ascribe a single environmental harm to 48,000 units. So these are moments where they have the burden of proof to prove that we have to revert from a 2040 plan that puts us in violation of the Metropolitan Land Planning Act that causes us to lose millions of dollars in grant funds for affordable housing, shelter for people who are unhoused or in encampments, or to give multi-use development that will bring pharmacies and grocery stores to communities. They have the burden of proof to bring something in front of you to say that we have to stop 100 units, 100,000 units, 125,000 units, and they don't do that.
I understand that, but are you affirmatively asking us to reverse and order 100,000 cap? That's what you're saying.
The chapter book I give you gives you two remedies. The first is it's their burden of proof to say that they are entitled to the injunction as worded, a reversion to the 2030. And they can't do that because it's not necessary or because they don't follow the remand instructions, but also because it's not necessary or appropriate because the current rate of development won't get us to 150,000 for thousands of years, and the district court found, as a matter of fact, that the current rate of development isn't harming the environment and does not cause irreparable harm. So that is straight up reversal. Just don't do the injunction. The second chapter you can open up is under MIRA, this court may grant equitable relief if it chooses to. It's not required to. And it may set alternative conditions. So the second chapter we're offering to you is that instead of rewriting our legislation, potentially violating separation of powers, losing millions of dollars in grant funds, instead, look at the Pauley report. Notice that they didn't meet their burden of proof to say that there was environmental harm at 100,000 units. Know that hundreds of thousands of units still won't be developed underneath the 2040 plan. That, too, is thousands of years in the future. And recognize that since they don't prove there's environmental harm at 100,000, they only establish harm at the threshold level of 150,000 units, that is appropriate.
Counsel, I think we understand that what the two options are that you're presenting. I think the question is, does your client have a preference as to which one we do? And in answering that, I'd wonder if you could speak to whether or not your client is also seeking a precedential opinion on this issue.
I appreciate the complexity of that question, Your Honor. My client has not expressed a preference to me about which of those two options would apply. I know from reading the amicus briefs that I believe the second option of just pure reversal would be preferred by the remainder of the amicus parties.
Except for Met Council, they proposed $21,800 cap.
I don't think they proposed that. I think what they said was that level of development would allow us to comply with the Metropolitan Land Planning Act and certainly not cause any environmental harm.
And what's your client's position on that versus $100,000?
My position on that is that rather than allowing amicus parties to present proposals, that the record before the district court, because the district court didn't look at the amicus briefs, is that we provided an alternative remedy, an alternative condition underneath MIRA, which is permissible. And we said, thousands of years in the future, which means we're never going to reach 100,000 units, cap us there, because it's still 50,000 units before they get to the threshold harm under the Pauley report.
So, counsel, one comment and a question. So for my part, I found the amicus briefs helpful. I thought they were very well written, and I certainly appreciate that. However, I do have a concern with the option of basically, it sounds like reverse and remand with specific instructions as to what the outlines, the contours of the injunction should be, because it feels like we're now stepping into a kind of a fact finder role of what exactly is the best number of units that should, you know, should it be 100,000, should it be 125, should it be 21,000. That it seems like that's a better decision to be made at the district court level rather than this court level, right?
I'll try to disagree without looking disagreeable.
Okay.
The case law says you don't need to remand if you're going to a purely legal conclusion or if additional findings of facts are unnecessary. And what the district court found is that if you allow even one development underneath the 2040 plan, it's a MIRA violation because the Pauley report says at 150,000 units, there's environmental harm. He quoted it an ongoing violation. And so he interpreted the MIRA to say that there's a concept of ongoing violation. That is a statutory construction, which means that you now have de novo review. It's not abuse of discretion. Anytime we're talking about what the MIRA relief requires, and so the remand findings are this. There's no full build out of the 2040 plan. It's conceded that the current level of development does not harm the environment. It's conceded that the current rate of development did not cause irreparable harm. It's conceded that the Metropolitan Council was not joined and that perhaps it is true that this will cause conflicting legal obligations. And so there are all of these consequences. Those are the findings. It's a long decision, even though I don't think it addresses the remand instructions. And so under Albert versus Paper Kalmuson Co., and under Ingram versus Barnhart, which were cases that in our opposition to the motion to strike the 2023 letter. Those cases say you don't remand when the district court showed conspicuous disregard for the remand instructions, and you don't do so where you can make a legal conclusion. And I see I'm beeping. And Judge Wheelock, I did not answer your question about the precedential, but I'm going to confer with my colleague.
Please do on rebuttal. So at this point, we'll turn to counsel for respondent. There are 15 minutes on the clock. If you need a moment to adjust the podium, feel free to do that. And we'll begin when you are ready.
May it please the court, Jack Perry from the Taft Law Firm, and with me is Nakima Levy Armstrong. And with the permission of the presiding judge, Judge Wheelock, I'd like to start, we did this during COVID quite a bit, is just give a quick overview of my 3 points before questions are posed.
That's
is that
fine.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And the first point is completely opposite of what was just argued to you. The entire case turns on one question. And the one question before you is whether the district court, under the highly deferential abuse of discretion standard of review, properly ordered the MEPA environmental review, that's the EIS-AUAR, of the residential development portions, and it's specific, it's not of the entire city. It's only of the R1, R1A, and the R2, R2A, low-density residential zoning districts, and that encompasses about 50%, according to the Pauley report, of the city, of the 2040 plan and its corresponding ordinances. That question is all you need to focus on because that question is dispositive. That's my second point, is it's dispositive because if the district court properly ordered under the MERA relief a MEPA EIS or AUR, and there's been no argument that that was proper, but if it's proper, and then the Supreme Court in 2021 said it was proper, and the Supreme Court in 1978 said it was proper, if it was, then the MEPA environmental review, which was ordered by statute, by rule, and by 1993 Minnesota Supreme Court precedent, had to both prohibit, i.e. enjoin, and that's the word in the statute, the rule, and the case, any starting or any approval of any portion of the plan once it's ordered. So as of September 5, 2023, when the judge ordered the MERA relief to be MEPA environmental review, statute, rule, case law says you can't go forward. So the injunction was required. And that injunction had to apply to everything that was at issue with the environmental review. And the environmental review, again, is not the whole city. It's only as to the low-density residential districts, which is super important when we get to this, the third issue. Third point, is that the district courts ordered reversion promptly, which was within 60 days or November 6th, to the 2030 plan, underscores our request for, the plaintiffs or respondents request for in our March 17, 2022 proposed order, and the judge's grant of and recognition of the Swan Lake 3 required balancing interests. And that's because, first and foremost, is if he didn't require them to go back to the 2030 plan, which was the status quo when we started the case, then they had no legal basis to approve any residential development in that half of the city. And so that's why we requested, we said, hey, you can't leave them without a basis to approve residential development for the 1, 2, 3 years, sometimes for NEIS to go forward. It was a mitigation measure for the city, not as the city tries to argue to you that it's against them, it's for them, it allows them to have development approved in the interim.
So I want to ask you a question.
Yeah.
Because speaking of mitigation measures, the last time that you were here, the last part of your argument, you spent some time pointing out and speaking with Judge Larkin about the fact that the city hadn't done anything to scale back.
Correct.
The 2040 plan. And you made that point, I think, effectively to the last panel. My question is, here we are with a proposed order submitted by the city capping residential development at 100,000. And in my view, the question is really focused on what does the statute authorize for relief? And if we're looking at 116B.07, what is necessary or appropriate relief? So what in the record supports the injunction against any implementation? That means any implementation, including 100,000 cap, 21,800 that Met Council proposes. What can you point to in the record that was before the district court that supports the conclusion that any implementation of the residential development portions of 2040 is going to cause environmental harm and requires this injunctive relief.
Yeah, and that's where I began, Jadid. It's a great question. That's why I began my argument with does MIRA allow the court, when there's a MIRA violation, does it allow a district court to order MIPA remedy?
And we agree that it does.
And it does.
The Supreme Court said it did.
It absolutely says it does. But there's a consequence to that which the city hasn't addressed, and it goes right to the heart of your question, is if you order that, and no one's saying they can't, and no one says that he couldn't do it, it's conspicuously absent. Everyone agrees he can do that. But there's a statutory rule and case law consequence for that is if you order environmental review, and I've represented landfills and power lines and all these things, and I can't go in and say, well, let me just bury this little 2-acre section of demolition material here while I do the environmental review. There is no exception to the prohibition, and that's the prohibition is under 116D04 subdivision 2B.
Right, but why, the question is, why is that the necessary or appropriate remedy? And so the way I read your briefing, you argued that, well, they can't be arguing this $100,000 household cap at this point because they were supposed to do that at summary judgment, and they were, you know, required to, you know, point out some alternative, feasible and prudent alternative.
That's my, I make that argument. The judge made that argument. That's not what I'm hanging my hat on. I'm hanging my hat on is when you order environmental review, then environmental review by statute, by rule, by case law precedent answers the question. You cannot allow anything to go forward. You
Why
have to stop.
Why was the order of environmental review necessary? For the entire plan, why would it be necessary and appropriate at 100,000? Why would it be necessary and appropriate at 21,800?
It is.
And what in the record supports that?
Well, what supports in the record is that we have the Pauley report only talks about those low density residential areas, the 45, 47, 49% of the city, and it's been established as a matter of law that. She found that there is the potential for material adverse environmental impact from going forward on that.
At what level?
What's that?
At what level?
She didn't say what level. And what the court said in the Pauley report, she just says this is what is authorized. And she cited in the report to Minnesota Rule 4410.4300, subpart 14, which says it's a mandatory, according to the EQB, which is the Environmental Quality Board, it's a mandatory EAW for 275 attached and 375 unattached houses. Let's use that as a barometer, because that's when you have an impact you have to look at by law. Then she cited to Minnesota Rule 4410.4400, subpart 19, which says you have a mandatory EIS, and there's only 28 categories of EISs. So if you meet that threshold, you have to do an environmental review, an EIS.
For contiguous
yeah.
properties by one proposer, right? First of all. And second, I mean, my concern with this argument, right, is that aren't we now, if this order can stand, isn't there no situation in which the exception for comprehensive planning under MIPA is applicable? I mean, basically, any comprehensive plan proposes anything above that threshold in the rule, then there's going to be a MIRA suit that's going to bootstrap in a MIPA EIS requirement.
So now we
can't harmonize those two statutes under this legal analysis.
Well, you can, because that's not my argument. Never's been my argument. And from if you look at the Supreme Court transcript, it's very clear is the reason this case is the outlier is that this is not a plan that says, yeah, we like homes here, we like businesses here, whatever it is. It's not just general guidance. It's not discretionary. What set this apart in the eyes of me in filing this lawsuit and in the eyes of the unanimous 7-0 decision in the Minnesota Supreme Court is that it prescribed. And on page, I think, 595, it talks about, it isn't that they said, yeah, you may be able to do that with discretion. It's a mandate. It is. They declared that you can build these 150,000 homes in this area, and there's nothing anybody can do about it.
Right, but so this is the issue that you prevailed on that point, right? And that's at summary judgment. You prevailed.
Yes.
You've affirmed no review. So the question is now, what is the necessary appropriate relief? Because my concern about interpreting the statute this way is that, I mean, MIRA is very broad. By design, it's very broad. Any person can sue any other person for doing something that could impact the environment. And, you know, people getting in their car from Fridley to drive to Minneapolis every day, that causes an environmental harm. Someone could sue and join the residents of Fridley from driving to Minneapolis today and causing each day and causing harm with their cars. And they could win under the burden of proof. And then the question is, at 116B.07, what is the necessary or appropriate relief there? And so in this case, what in the record is it, my question renders to, what can you point to in the record that says a full injunction against any implementation with no cap at 100,000 or 21,800, what in the record supports that full injunction?
Judge Eade, I'm going to go back to 1978, and I'm going to lay out the exact scenario we have here, because that's what I have, and that's what they had in 1978. It was under the Power Plant Siting Act, 216E, and they'd already gone, as required under the PPSA, they'd already been required to do an EIS, full-blown EIS, on this line. They had already had to go through an ALJ proceeding to confirm it was all fine. And they found issues with that. They didn't look at certain things. And so what they did is it was all enjoined, and what the Supreme Court said was, you have a mirror of violation, you have to do a new EIS. And the consequence of a new EIS is, I'm not telling you what it should be, Judge Eade, I'm telling you what it has to be under statute, rule, and case law. Because it's once you order an EIS, which is what they did in 1978, they ordered an EIS. And you don't get to this level of, well, you know, what should we do, what number?
Well, but I think we do, counsel. I mean, with all due respect, under Minnesota Statute 116D.07 Subdivision 1 and case law, the Wakota case, the district court does have to look at not only what is necessary and appropriate to protect the environment, but also it should not impose any unnecessary hardship on the enjoined party. And the enjoined party here has outlined different options. And it sounds like your argument is there's only one option here, to revert to the 2030 plan. But there are other options, including under the 2040
plan. Let's look at the record, because the record makes it easy. And if you're not going to affirm this one, then there's a real problem. And I know, Judge Eade, you're talking about precedent and what are we doing. But here we have a judge who said the record could not be more, his word, lopsided. We have an expert report saying there's going to be these environmental impacts. On the flip side, what happens in the 2030 plan?
But let me stop you there, counsel. When you say these reports, are you referring to just to the Pauli report?
There's dueling reports. We have the Pauli report says these are the environmental impacts.
Based on what? At what level? 150,000 units?
She said under the plan, which the Supreme Court said that's what we're supposed to look at, is the full build-out.
I think it's more specific than that, though, counsel. When I read the report, it talks about after you hit the 150,000 unit mark. I don't think it says under the 2040 plan there's going to be, I mean, your
but
interpretation.
It's not possible. You don't ever do that with environmental review or anything
counsel,
else.
Counsel,
I'm sorry.
Hold on. Let me finish, please. I think your interpretation of the report would mean that even if there's one unit built under the 2040 plan, there'd be harm. I think the reference to the 150, I think, is the key part of the Pauli report that stuck out to me. So
Judge Reyes, there is nothing in the Pauli report that suggests that there is no environmental harm till 150,000. Nothing in there. That's why she cites to the Minnesota rule provisions. She also cites to the addendum or the appendix B to the report that was the plan at the time, which talks about 48,000. She also talks about 42. Those are all points where there's going to be environmental harm. And what I want to get to, if I can finish the question, I'm sorry.
Please do.
Is We have that harm. And the judge has ordered an environmental review based upon that harm to find out where is that triggering point. Because he was very clear, I don't know where it triggers. He has the same question you and Judge Eaton. I don't know if it's at 10,000, 5,000, 275. He didn't know. And the only way to find that out, and that's the same with landfills, the same with power lines, the only way to find it out is through environmental review, which is why footnote 17 controls the arguments that you guys are raising. And as to the 2030 plan, if I may finish that too, is that they rely entirely about Durham's paragraph 2 from February 2nd, 2022. It doesn't apply to the R1, R1A, R2, or R28. It is completely irrelevant because that plan says we are preserving housing stock and we are not going to change the zoning. If you're not changing the zoning for that area, this 50%, you can't build any new homes, let alone 700,000. So that there is no comparison between the two. But I think paragraph 17, Judge Reyes, of the Supreme Court's order in 2021 answers the very real question you two or both, maybe all three of you, are struggling with is how do you do it? You can't do it. And to ask a litigant to come forward and say, well, at this point, this is when there's a harm, it's never been done. There's no environmental review case ever doing that. It's not in the rules. It would be impossible. I would lose every single time. MIRA is dead, if that's the analysis.
Yeah,
yes.
So do you agree that it is the plaintiff's burden to establish entitlement to injunctive relief, that basic principle of law?
Yes.
And so even after summary judgment is granted, you agree that it is Smart Growth's burden to show, to comply with 116B, and to show that the injunction should issue, it's necessary or appropriate, and that it's not causing an unnecessary hardship on the appellant.
I agree that's the burden, and I agree that we satisfied it, and the judge found we satisfied it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Okay, and we'll have 5 minutes on the clock for rebuttal, and counsel for appellant, feel free to adjust the podium if you need to, and you can begin when you are ready.
May it please the court, Judge Wheelock, we do not believe that the opinion needs to be precedential, and the reason for that is that we believe that the central inquiry is what is necessary or appropriate, and which is a factually intensive issue about where the threshold of harm starts. And secondly, we believe that the remedy that we are requesting is based upon previously examined case law, and so a non-precedential opinion could be granted.
Counsel, can I ask you a question? So, if I understand respondent's argument correctly, basically the argument is you need injunctive relief under the statute so you can determine what level of harm there would be. In other words, that's part of the fact finding right there. Why isn't that argument correct?
Well, the first is, under their interpretation, the city hasn't been ordered to do an EIS or AUAR. It's voluntary.
But that's something, that's relief that can be provided under MIRA, right?
What the Minnesota Supreme Court held is it is conceivable that there could be some environmental review required of a comprehensive plan, even though it is exempt under MIPA.
Right, but
that's
separate. I mean, MIPA is separate. We're talking about I understand your point there, but we're talking about MIRA here.
Right.
That language from the Supreme Court seems to allow an EIS, for example, under MIRA, correct?
In concept, yes. Not here.
Why? I don't understand that. What do you mean in concept, but not here? That doesn't seem to make sense.
Because under MIRA, it requires what is necessary or appropriate to protect the environment. And you can, and under basic injunction law, you can't require something more than the particulars of the case. And so if, for example, the Pauley report had done an EIS or AUER of a certain area, then we would need to rebut that to prove that the comp plan doesn't cause an environmental harm. But it is conceded that the Pauley report did not perform an EIS or an AUR. It performed an ad hoc environmental review, and the city hired experts to rebut that. And then the district court moved the ball by saying, no, you have to do an EIS or an AUR, which is the state's most rigorous environmental review. And the reason why you can't approve an EIS or an AUR here is because the court didn't order an EIS or an AUR. MIPA has established rules for EIS and AUR and AUARs. And if there's a problem with that outcome, then we bring a petition to your court to seek review. But the district court didn't do that. What the district court said is, I will establish guidelines, I will establish parameters, I'll open motion practice so respondents can seek any type of relief related to the EIS or an AUIR, which they've asked for the city not to be the responsible government unit, which means that the district court didn't order an EIS or an AUR. He ordered a Frankenstein mutation of whatever he wants to review. So you don't know what the EIS or AUIR is.
You have the respondents acknowledging it's their burden to show... to make a showing that supports an injunction, they have to comply with 116B.07 and not cause unnecessary hardship. To be fair to them, aren't we putting the cart before the horse if we agree with you and say, well, they have to do an EIS to get the court to order the city to do an EIS? I mean, how does that work?
In order to seek dissolution of injunction, the city shouldn't be required to examine a type and scope of review, the entire comp plan, for any type of development in order to respond to the Pauley report that looked at urban neighborhoods and triplexes. That's inherently overly broad. That's impermissible. But before you get to the EIS or AUAR and whether or not that's required, you first have to decide whether or not it's necessary or appropriate to even revert back to the 2030 in the first place. And what I heard Respondents' Counsel say to you explicitly is, the Pauley report, she didn't say that. And I don't know that, and it can't be done. But that is a remarkable proposition, that you couldn't get an expert to say, you know what, at this stage, 2 years into the comprehensive plan, there would be, in theory, 50,000 units, and that would cause environmental harm. Of course you could do that. The idea that it's totally and wholly unknown what kind of environmental harm might happen before the 150,000, burden, 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 significant burden. Under Schaller, they have to prove materially adverse environmental harm. The Pauley report doesn't do it. She didn't say that.
That's at the violation stage, right? We're past that, right? That's not at the relief stage.
No, absolutely not. Because when you look at the release stage, it's what's necessary or appropriate to protect the environment. And when it talks about protecting the environment, it's talking about what materially adversely affects the environment. So if you're sitting here with a record where you don't know and they don't know and the district court doesn't know where the harm starts, then 100,000 is reasonable because it's less than the threshold. It's less than the affirmative evidence in the record about where the harm starts, and it does not cause unnecessary hardship, to go to Judge Reyes's question. No redlining of our ordinances, no reversion back to a 2030 plan, no loss of millions of dollars in funds for affordable housing, shelters for encampments, services for the community. All of that goes away with the proposal that we had. And what you know based upon the record is that the current rate of development does not harm the environment. And so saying that we can allow 700,000 excess units under the 2030 plan, and that's not a MIRA violation, but stopping even a single triplex underneath the 2040 plan is required to avoid a MIRA violation, that doesn't make sense. There's no environmental review of the 2030 plan. We could have 700,000 units. I am beeping. So unless anybody has a question.
Does anybody have any other questions?
No. We've given you two chapters, and we'd appreciate you opening the page to either one of them.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you to all council. Thank you for the presentations today, as well as the briefing. Thank you to the amicus council as well for the briefing there. We have reviewed the materials. We take the case under advisement at this time, and a decision will be issued in the statutory time frame.
Thank you.
Thank you. And we're going to take a moment to reconfigure our panel.